What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Heaven and Hell podcast. I'm Lauren, aka Heaven.
And I'm Ellie. I'm also known as Hell.
And if you guys don't already know, we are a book podcast that focuses on different romantasy series, currently on A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas. In this episode, we will be continuing our coverage of A Court of Mist and Fury with chapters 31 through 38. Just so you guys know, we will be touching on the plot, the characters, foreshadowing, world building, and different theories and Maas-verse connections. With that being said, I want to go ahead and let you guys know that there will be some spoilers in this episode for all the books in the ACOTAR series. If you have not read her other series, you will be fine until we get to the Maas-verse connections and theories portion where we will start talking about her other books and series, but I will give you another spoiler warning before that starts. So if you've read all five of the ACOTAR books that are currently out, then you are good to go and safe to hang out with us until that point.
Just to let you guys know, we are an explicit adult podcast, and please see our show notes for content and trigger warnings. Make sure you check out our past episodes where we deep dive into the rest of the Sarah J. Maas universe. We also have several episodes out about all three Crescent City books. Okay. We also have a new Powerless bonus episode that just came out this past Friday. Make sure to check that out. Lastly, take some time to rate and review us, or if you're watching this video on YouTube, please like and subscribe, and make sure to let us know your thoughts in the comments. And now let's get into the plot of Mist and Fury.
Let's do it, guys.
Starting with chapter 31, awaiting any word still from the summer and spring court, Feyre is back training with Cassian in the morning. Mor and Amarin arrive at the training ring at the House of Winds and say that Azriel is on his way with some news. Rhysand shows up and says the summer court has gotten back to them and invited him, Feyre, and Amarin to the court. Rhysand doesn't want to bring Cassian because apparently he wrecked a whole building last time he was there and got banned. Yep.
Fucking Cassian.
It's very much in character. Their mission is to get half of the Book of Breathings, but Amarin is allowed to take any treasure if she wants anything that she sees. The High Lord of the Summer Court is young and untested, and Cassian is not all for Feyre going there because of the message it will send to Tamlin. Feyre asks Rhysand, is this another trap he's going to put her into, and he says no. After a bit of back and forth flirting, Rhysand winnows away to prepare for the departure tomorrow. Chapter 32. The next morning, with the three looking their very best, Rhysand winnows Feyre and Amarin into Adriata. The summer court is gorgeous. It is a tan stone palace perched on a mountain island on a bay. The High Lord of Summer arrives to greet them, and he has white hair, rich brown skin, and blue eyes. And part of him feels so familiar to Feyre, given that she has some of his powers. They meet Cresseida, who is the princess of Adriata, and her brother, the prince, and the head of Tarquin's armies, Varian. Tarquin takes them into the castle. He asks Feyre questions about herself, like, is being High Fae better than being mortal, and how do you fit in Rhysand's court? At lunch, we get insight that Tarquin is not on Highburn's side, but wants to avoid war, which Cresseida wonders if Tamlin is going to go to war with the Night Court to get Feyre back. Feyre is a bit offended with Cresseida's statements, which she is saying that it is good to know they aren't housing a stolen bride from her master. Feyre replies and says she left of her own free will and nobody is her master. Cresseida says that if Tamlin wrote to them to return Feyre, they would have to obey. Chapter 33. The Night Court crew go to their rooms, and Rhysand tells Feyre he actually does like Tarquin, and to not get caught because he doesn't want to make an enemy of him. He notices Tarquin has been staring at Feyre. Ooh. He orders Feyre to light a candle with her magic, but instead water is summoned from her. Feyre tells him that she would go back to Tamlin if he's really going to start a war over her, and Rhysand says sometimes love can be poison. They all take a ride on Tarquin's ship as Rhysand works his magic to distract Cresseida and keep her busy. Feyre talks with Tarquin, learning that Amarantha killed his cousin, who was a previous High Lord. He got the orders to hide their treasures ASAP, and Feyre tells him her father was a merchant and she would love to see those treasures, which he agrees to show her tomorrow. Feyre notices Rhysand is being extremely flirty with Cresseida, which upsets her, and she admits to herself that she is just unhappy. Leaving to get some fresh air by herself, when they dock the boat, Rhysand and Cresseida are nowhere to be found. Chapter 34, Missing Valoris Feyre contemplates her feeling for Rhysand. Feyre skips breakfast because she is not sure how to handle it if she sees Rhysand and Criseyde together. Nuala and Cara Dwan dress Feyre for the day, and she heads off for her tour of the treasure with Tarquin, who is dressed in the exact same colors as her. Shout out to the twins for knowing what he's wearing. Mm-hmm. Love that.
Little wraithy wraiths walking through walls and spying on people.
Rhysand sees Feyre, and to make him jealous, she gives Tarquin a loving smile that she has not given anyone in a long time. As Tarquin and Feyre go to the treasure room, which is one of many, Tarquin tells her she is the most valuable thing in the room. Ooh. He gives Feyre a necklace of black diamonds as he asks her to be the human emissary for his court. He tells Feyre that Rhysand lied to Amarantha under the mountain to spare them, and that Feyre's kindness is a reflection of Rhysand's. Feyre is really uncomfortable with him talking about all of this, especially his feeling that Rhysand is faking being evil. So she tells him to stop. He says he has one more question. Is it true that you left Tamlin because he locked you up? She nods yes, and Tarquin says he will not tell the Spring Court that she was here. I love Tarquin. Okay. They continue on their tour as Tarquin says the same thing Feyre said to him earlier. Quote, I think it might be easy to love you, Feyre, easier to be your friend. After the tour, Feyre finds Rhysand in her bedroom waiting for her. This is the moment, guys. Okay. She questions if he took Criseyde to bed, and he says, no, she wanted to, but I just walked her to her room, and that's all. They get into a back and forth about who is jealous more. He tells her he spared Tarquin's life under the mountain because he was also not for the Fae class systems and that he is a good male. He admits to Feyre that he is jealous of Tarquin because he has a neutral court and will never have to look up to the night sky and wish. Feyre is smitten that Rhysand opened up to her, and she says, quote, to the people who look up to the stars and wish rise. He cheers with her by saying, quote, for the stars who listen and the dreams that are answered.
If that's not Aquamath in a fucking quote, I don't know what is. Now that we've had our precious moment with our favorite quote, time to get back into it. Chapter 35. It's been 2 days and Feyre still doesn't have shit. Wandering around the summer court while trying to look disinterested hasn't accomplished much. Coming back from another day of investigating, she runs into Amryn and Varian. Wanting to give them privacy, she moves to go inside, but is stopped when she sights a building she hasn't seen before. She feels a slight pull to it and realizes she hasn't noticed it before due to it being covered by the tide during certain hours of the day. Not convinced solely by this that the book is 100% there, she comes up with a plan to get a closer look while seeming innocent. Later at dinner, Feyre tells Tarquin about her adventures in the city, and he tells her that maybe he'll join her in the morning. She casually brings up the small building she noticed earlier and immediately notices the shift in the mood. Entering his mind and using the small piece of power she received from him, she manipulates his thoughts to trust her and not view her as a threat. He agrees to take her out the next day, forgetting his worries altogether. Amryn and Rhys come to her room later that night to come up with a plan. Rhys tells Feyre she did what she had to, and the fact that she feels bad about it is a good thing. Most people with her gifts stop caring about their violations, and that's when it truly becomes a problem. The plan is for Amryn and Feyre to enter the building while Rhys keeps watch, shields them from above. Tomorrow night, shit is going down. In chapter 36, the next morning, Feyre does go view the city with Tarquin again, before coming up with an excuse for going back to the castle. Letting Tarquin know that they will be returning to the night court tomorrow afternoon, they enjoy one last dinner together. She feels terrible about what they have to do, but gets dressed for her mission regardless. Later, Rhys drops off Amryn and Feyre at the building, but they need to work quickly before the tide comes back in. Not being able to enter at first, Feyre quite literally shifts into Tarquin and is granted entry. Wading through the muck, Feyre can see that even Amryn is disturbed by the power hiding somewhere in this place. Continuing their search, Feyre finally hears a voice whispering that sounds like it could literally be in the room with them, as she finds it's coming from a metal box. It's questioning her, wanting to know who she is. Rushed by Amryn and the incoming tide, Feyre tries to convince it she is Tarquin. The voice goes quiet, and Feyre grabs the box, ready to make their escape, until the box calls her a liar and the door slams shut. Amryn begins pounding on the door using her strange magic and power to force it open. When she does, more water floods the chamber and both of their powers combined allow them to slowly move forward. They make it past the door and begin climbing the steps, but not fast enough. The door at the top slams shut and they both manage to gasp in a breath before they are trapped with the water coming down on them. They make it to the top and Amryn begins pounding on the door with her power again, but the door won't budge. Feyre fashions talons and begins clawing, but it's not enough. They're both going to drown here. Until the door is ripped open by water wraiths of all things. They fly through the ocean and throw them on the beach with both of them expelling the water from their lungs that they swallowed. Feyre looks at the water and sees the wraiths there as they exclaim, their sister's debt is now paid, and disappear beneath the waves. Rhysand finds them on the beach asking them, what the fuck happened? They set off the alarms during their escapades, so Rhys quickly winnows them to the townhouse and tells them to explain. First, though, Amryn wants to know why the wraiths came to help, and Feyre tells her about the tithe. Amryn laughs, saying she is one lucky son of a bitch, and Feyre joins in hysterically, much to the chagrin of the rest of the circle. After getting it together, Feyre attempts to open the Book of Breathings, who is talking to her in a very creepy manner. It finally acquiesces to her demands and opens, revealing its secrets. Amryn immediately recognizes the language, and we find out Rhys was banking on that and got lucky. She will need time and the other half to decipher it, but at least they have a chance. Still confused by the King of Hybern's ultimate plan and understanding they will have to wait for answers, the Inner Circle wants to hear what happened during the robbery. Feyre lets Amryn regale them with the tale. Finally, in chapter 38, after getting some much-needed rest, Feyre wakes up to find the house empty and chooses to take advantage of the time reading. She goes to the garden until the sun starts to fade and decides she wants to watch the sunset, which takes her to the rooftop patio. She finds Rhys there, wallowing with a drink in his hand and a bottle on the table. Curious, Rhys tells her to look in the box that is next to the bottle, and she opens it to find 3 large blood rubies sent by the summer court. It is tradition for them to send them as a warning to people on their list. It seems like their shenanigans at the summer court didn't go quite to plan, and Rhys is upset with himself. Feyre tries to convince him that things will work out, but nothing she says seems to be getting through to him. She debates leaving, but thinks of all the times that Rhys has been there for her through her struggles and begins to tease him with thoughts of lingerie shopping and sending them to Tarquin. This gets Rhys to perk up a bit, but they are interrupted by Az, and Feyre takes the distraction to bolt. Alone, she realizes that it was a bit more than flirting and begins to wonder just how far things would have gone. She begins to picture a very spicy scene in the lingerie store before walking into a pool and realizing Rhys was sending the images into her head. Prick. Much later that night, after enjoying wine and dinner with Moore, Feyre is drifting to sleep when the house begins groaning. Feyre doesn't see anything amiss besides the darkness creeping under her door. Recognizing it as Rhys, she immediately goes to investigate. She finds him utterly asleep and cocooned in his own power. The house is shaking with the force, but she can't physically wake him. She goes into his mind and meets his power with hers, and he slowly starts to come back, but not before thinking she is a threat and pinning her by the throat. Waking up and recognizing that it's her, he lets her go and apologizes. She soothes him and talks with him for a bit before heading out, telling him she'll be there when he's ready to really discuss with someone. She dares one last glance at him before leaving, taking in his naked body and picturing the painting in her head, feeling that hole in her chest slowly healing. Let's get into some character discussions. So first of all, let's just talk about Cassie and Asriel more. They're really more held back in this part of the book. Cassian literally can't go to the summer court because the last time he was there was an incident where he literally destroyed an entire building, so they don't want him there. And then Asriel and Moore stay back as well because Rhys says that he needs to take Feyre, obviously, because she's the one who can find the Book of Breathings. And then he wants to take Amryn because they're afraid of her and she's just like the better choice of all of them. So they're not so important in this stretch of chapters. And then we have Amryn, who does go to the summer court with Rhysand and Feyre. She's there not only to be a protector and to scare them into respecting them, basically, but she's also there to distract Varian. So it works, I would say.
It does. It works.
Yeah.
It works. But also, I think it was mentioned, just to add, that Bryson wanted her to come because she's the only person who can learn that language that was in the Book of Breathings, because it's like language, but she knows it because she's old as fuck.
Yeah.
10,000 years old.
I touched on it a little bit in the chapter summary. He was banking on the fact that she would be able to read it, but he wasn't sure. He just was like, I hope that she can, and he got lucky. It's really interesting that she can and why she can read it, and we'll touch on that a little bit later. But then speaking of Varian, I at least couldn't, at this point, can't quite get a read on him. You can't tell if he's weary of Amarin or if he's low-key obsessed with her. So obviously, I think we know going forward, they end up being a thing. And so I think he's crushing on her at this point. But it is funny because it's like Feyre walks up the stairs at one point when she first sees where the book is hidden. And he looks like he's about to pounce on her and push her in the water. So even Feyre doesn't really know what's going on. But like, I think he's just like, he just is liking him some Amarin. That finally brings us to Tarquin. Tarquin is a very interesting character, and we get a lot of backstory on him at this point. So I think this is the most that we'll ever focus on him. So go ahead and dive in really quick. Tarquin is a very young High Lord. He's only 80 years old. He was 30 years old when Amarantha came in and sacked the Summer Court, basically, and killed off his predecessor, and he had to take over because she killed so many people that like he was the next in line. So he's also a sailor. And he's so sweet. He's literally against the classism that is happening in this book between the lesser fairies and the high fae. He's not for it. He feels like everybody should be equal. He wants to be able to let the people that serve in his court have the same rights and the same qualities as everybody else. So we stand Tarquin. And Rhys also really likes Tarquin for this reason. Like, he respects the shit out of the fact that he believes what he does, and that's the vision that he has for the world. Amarantha, fucking bitch that she is, murdered the entire Summer Court because they rebelled when she came into power the 50 years ago before the start of Under the Mountain. Like I said, he was one of the only ones left. Tarquin was also stuck under the mountain, and that's where we got that whole like scene where Rhysan, I don't know if you remember in the first book, but Rhysan like literally killed the traitor that was him, but he refused to do it in a fucked up way. Amarantha wanted him to turn him into a ghost and wipe his memory, and Rhysan just killed him quickly because of the whole fact that he really does believe that Tarquin is this good for his people, and honestly I think respected the fact that he at least tried to do something to fight against Amarantha.
I really like Tarquin. He's definitely a younger High Lord, and he even admits himself that he might not be super qualified to be the fucking High Lord, but right. It just happens. I love the way that him and Feyre's friendship progresses throughout the books.
Yeah,
he's awesome. I might be wrong. I think it might be in Court of Silver Flames. There's like a meeting between Tarquin and Feyre, and he finds out that she's pregnant, and it was a cute moment.
Yeah.
And he's always just like, oh, there's my friend. I've been missing you.
He also is very wise, a little bit beyond his years, obviously, with just knowing that what's happening in the Fae realm isn't cool. But then also, he literally says at some point in these chapters, he says, sometimes I feel like Rhys was really playing the whore to protect all of us and not just to be Amarantha's whore for real. And so he has a lot of insight. He's wise beyond his years, and he can see shit that at this point the rest of the world can't even see. So he's very perceptive, and he's just sweet. He's a good guy.
So speaking of Rhysan, during the time in the Summer Court, he does have to put on the mask that he has whenever he leaves Volaris, that he is this overpowered, terrible High Lord who just kills his people all the time.
Yeah.
He rules Hewn City. Obviously, that's not who he actually is, but he unfortunately does have to put that mask on a little bit, not to an extreme amount, because he does want to come across as appealing to Tarquin. He doesn't want to be a total asshole, but yeah. He does have to look around and be like, I'm here. I'm the shit. I want to flirt with Cressida, which in turn makes Feyre really jealous. And he, in return, is jealous of Tarquin, because Tarquin and Feyre have a few flirty moments. Mm. But really, we, as the reader's POV, we understand they're only doing that in order to gain their trust. But they also are doing it because they want to make each other jealous. It's, I don't know. Yes.
There's layers to this shit. They're both trying to make each other jealous, but then also they do have to put on this air. But straight up, Tarquin, he can see through it. He's like, is Feyre, I see that you're not this asshole. And that's why he even says about the whole Reese thing about like how I can see how Reese is also putting on this face while he's much better at it than you. The fact that he invited someone into his court who's as good as I can tell that you are makes me believe that he's not this guy that everybody thinks he is. But they're like back and forth at this part, the way that they're both trying to make each other jealous, and it's borderline miscommunication. And I'm like, can y'all just fucking fuck already? I love it because they're just riling like each other up. Yeah, exactly. It's because
a slow burn.
When I really thought that he slept with Cressida, and I was like, no fucking way. I was like, shut. I was like, Rice? Am I going to have to come into this book? But it ended up being that he wasn't.
I'm going to have to widow.
No, literally.
To Dolores or the summer court and kick your fucking ass.
I will. I motherfucking will. But at the same time, knowing what I know now, they're mates. I can't even see him doing that until Feyre has all but rejected him. But I'm just like, dude, I was not here for it. And I did not like Cressida, whatever her name is. She was giving way too many slights to Feyre for no reason. That low-key, I'm bitchy, but not direct. I'm like, at least Nesta is just direct with her shit. At least just Nesta is just like, this is what it is. This is who I am. Cressida is like trying to do that. Like, I'm cute, but I'm going to say bitchy things and pretend like I'm not really saying what I'm saying. And I can't stand that.
I definitely had an issue with her being like, we have to return you to your master. I was like, okay, are we in the fucking under? It's like, what is happening? I get this is like a book probably based in those type of times. But I'm saying like in Prithian, I feel like, well,
they're not so far removed from slavery and that kind of
thing. Yeah.
But at the same time, it's come on, girl. Be a girl's girl. Why are you even playing into this shit?
I don't know why she acted that way. Maybe she's just wary or something. Or maybe she really wanted to get with Rhysand. Obviously, she wanted to. But maybe she was like, who's this girl? I want Rhysand. Yeah. Which obviously doesn't happen.
Which she was serving a purpose in this part, because I'm like, at least I got the delicious tension between Feyre and Reese, because the tension is there. It's amping up. It's so clearly gone from now. Feyre is just really trying to like separate herself from the fucked up situation she was in before. Now she's finally accepting the fact that she likes Reese too. She's into this flirting. She let herself get swept up in that vision with no issue, like in the lingerie shop. Like she was like, it took her running into a pole before she was like, oh shit, like this isn't happening in my own head. She's into this shit. And then the way she was checking him out when she was waking him up from that nightmare, she was like, I tried to keep my eyes above his chest, but they just wandered on down. I was like, yeah, they fucking did. Yeah, they did. Okay. Why wouldn't they? So I'm here for it. We're finally getting into the good stuff, like with them there. I was going to say it's only up from here, but we all know that it goes up and then it quickly comes down and then it very quickly goes all the way up. Their relationship is super cute, but yeah, definitely enjoying some of this slow burn, some of this tension, some of the realization finally that, yeah, bitch, you're over Tamlin and you should have been over him a long time ago because you never should have been on him in the first fucking place. We'll let that slide, you young, naive little girl. Like, but yeah, she's here for Reese now and I'm here for it.
Period.
So with that being said, let's talk about some like foreshadowing and different stuff that we think is being hinted at in these chapters.
So one thing that I caught on to in one of the first chapters of the episode is how Cassian was really hesitant with Rhysand of letting Feyre go to the summer court because he was nervous it was going to send a really bad sign to Tamlin. Oh, he thinks that she got kidnapped and now like she's going to be at the fucking summer court. Like it looks, and they don't agree on that. And I think that is a little bit of foreshadowing showing that not everyone in the inner circle is always going to agree with Rhysand. There's definitely a lot of moments coming up in the future books where they don't always get along with the Bat Boys. I wanted to point that out there. I think that's the first time that we have seen a little bit of tension between Cassian and Rhysand.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that is definitely the first time we've seen it between Cassian and Reese, but it has definitely already been there with Azriel and Reese. So you definitely are expounding upon that. And I do agree that this is like showing that obviously they respect Reese and at the end of the day, the buck stops with him, but they definitely are all free thinking individuals and they all have their own opinions and thoughts on things, even though they are this unit. it's not always all hunky-dory between them. I was just going to say, Cassian kind of had a good point. And even though I do understand why Reese did it, because at the end of the day, they needed the Book of Breathings, and that was the most important thing. Cassian was right, but I also feel like he was a little bit butthurt that he had to stay behind. So there was that too.
Yeah. I need to know what happened. Yeah. I really wonder what happened. Like, why were you, what happened in the summer court where you destroyed a building and then you got banned? I'm so curious about that.
Yeah, no, like literally, what did you do? Like, it had to have been pretty bad.
It had to be really bad. What building are we talking about? What the actual fuck? Yeah. But anyway, moving on, speaking of the summer court, we go to the summer court in these chapters, which the first time I was ever reading Mist and Fury, I was so fucking excited to see a different court other than the spring court and the night court. I was like, oh my God, we're seeing other courts. What's it going to look like? There's new characters. I was so excited. And the summer court is all the courts are super beautiful. But like, I'm not really a summer girly. I hate summer, to be honest. I don't like the heat. But the summer court, it just seems so green.
Yeah.
All the buildings are like tan and they're like on a bay. There's like different islands all around the courts with like different major cities. It just seems so pretty. Ah, I don't know. And Feyre even mentions that she sees so many ships going in and out of the bay.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seems like relaxing and calm. And that's probably why Tarquin kind of has that same vibe too.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. Yeah. That's probably like his vibes are very reminiscent of what it is to be summer. And the only thing for me is I'm like you, as much as I think it's gorgeous, I would be the, like, let's go there for a week. And then I got to come back to either the fall court or the night court, because I cannot with the perpetually hot shit. Like, spring sounds terrible to me. Okay, just 12 months of allergies and pollen and fucking, like, as pretty as it is to see for a short period of time, I do not want it to stay. Same thing with summer. Summer's gorgeous. The beach is beautiful. I think all the colors, my favorite color is blue. The description of all the different shades of blue and even the attire that they wear, oh, I'm here for it. But just the straight up temperature, I'm with you. I couldn't do perpetual hot summer. Because even Feyre's, even with the breeze coming off the bay, it was still way hotter than the night court. And I was like, yeah, see, this is how I know I'm a night court girly. Like, I couldn't brilliant. Do it. So, but yeah, definitely a vacation spot. Come hang out with Tarquin for a week. Hopefully Cressida's also on vacation and I don't have to fucking see her. And we could just chill and walk around and eat fresh fish off the ocean. I don't know, like all the other cool shit she was doing, checking out the art galleries. Maybe he can give me a necklace of black diamonds. Everything will be cool.
Just yeah, take me for a ride on your fucking ship.
Literally.
I want to see the island.
Yeah, he literally
for a small amount of time.
Exactly. He literally takes them on a yacht, basically, right? I'm like, yeah, I want to hang out with this guy for a small amount of time. It's just like, so clear about that. Speaking of the necklace that Tarquin gave Feyre, I do think that it's just such an ode that there's a part where as bitchy as Cressida is, I keep going back and forth on her name, but as bitchy as Cressida is, she's like, it suits you better. It didn't even fit in the center court anyways. Okay, bitch, that's right. Because I'm a night court baddie and I do look good in this fucking black necklace of diamonds and you're a hater. And so I just thought that was so funny because it's like, it is a little bit of a nod to the fact that Feyre does belong at the night court. Like this gorgeous black necklace of glittering black diamonds. If that doesn't say the night sky, I don't know what does. Cressida saying that it suits her, that it didn't fit in at the summer court anyways. Like these are all hints and alluding to the fact that Feyre is that night court bitch. She's where she belongs. And I love that for her because the black glittering diamonds don't belong in the spring court either. So we're clear about that. So after that though, Feyre, like after, oh God, it's so crazy because Tarquin is so nice to her. And I know she battles so much during this whole section about like how she doesn't want to do this. Like he's so kind. I don't want to invade his, you know, his life like this. He doesn't even know we're about to steal from him. And then like, you know, she does some kind of messed up stuff anyways. Not only does she steal from him, but when he starts getting a little suspicious, she takes it upon herself to like literally go into his mind and trick his mind into thinking that she's him and then convinces him to trust her and to forget about everything that she had asked about and just take her on this tour. And so this is definitely going back to some of the things I've said in the past about Feyre being a morally gray character and how she's not 100% morally righteous, as I feel like it definitely she was portrayed in the first book. Maybe now it's we're starting to see those things that I'm talking about. But yeah, definitely a morally great decision. And I'm with Reese that it is good that she like has qualms about it, because otherwise I would just be like, wow, she's just really going for it. But it is definitely her crossing that line until she knows she that what she did is wrong, but she had to do it to accomplish her goal. We're just starting to see some of that behavior from Feyre, and I feel like it only gets more prominent as the books go on.
And I think when Tarquin literally said to her, I will not tell Tamlin you are here at all, I think she really struggled after that. Yeah. Like, oh, this man is saying that he's literally going to break the law pretty much for me and tell him if he asks, I'm not here.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm really about to steal from him.
I know.
Sorry. But it's okay. They get their friends now. It's totally fine. Yeah. It's totally fine. It's all made up. It's cool.
Exactly.
But they're questionable. But I do understand her POV. I have to do this one bad thing in order to potentially save everyone.
Yeah.
So, sorry.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how many times she's been presented with this conundrum too, of like having to sacrifice her morals for the sake of the greater good. She literally had to kill two people in order to save the world, basically. And here we are again. She's trying to prevent a war with Highburn. She wants to save the humans in the human realm who don't even know that they're being threatened, but she's having to do questionable things to get the job done. And philosophically, what are you going to do? I don't know. I feel like this is the first time that we're really getting like a good like question about it, because this is the first time where even Feyre's debating hardcore. She's like, do I have another option? Can I just ask him for the book? Do I have to lie to him? Do I have to invade his, you know, mind like this? And so it's just really, I don't know. I really love this dilemma that they're going through here, and like just showing what SJM is doing, showing the we all have to make decisions. And in the end, she chooses to steal from him. She chooses to violate their friendship, and he has to send the blood rubies after her, even though, like you said, we all know that they end up being cool in the end. There is also the little bit of Feyre, as bad as she felt about the whole situation, she also was exhilarated about it. The fact that she was even able to do that. She was like looking at Reese, oh my God, did you see what I just did? And he touches on her later and is, yeah, like you did. People who trained for years couldn't have done that as well. But she was just like, even though I just did this messed up thing, bro, I'm the shit. Did you see what I just did? I was able to manipulate this guy, go into his brain and fucking literally change his mind. And so she's intrigued by her own power while still realizing that she did a bad thing. So just really interesting in Feyre's journey and the different things that she's going to have to deal with going into the next book and end of this book and the decisions that she's going to have to make about the things that she's able to do, because Feyre is one powerful ass bitch. The last thing I wanted to just touch on or talk about is the fact that we finally get the infamous fucking quote in the second to last chapter, but literally the whole like calls to like, I think it's the first time we hear it, but it is not going to be the motherfucking last. The one thing that I did notice that I feel like gets left out a lot of the time because it's such a joke about the whole like calls to like thing, but the rest of the quote literally is unmade and made and unmade. That is the cycle. Like calls to like. So that made me question, what does that mean? Is it foreshadowing something? Have we seen anything go from being made to being unmade?
Oh my God, have we?
I'm
trying to think. Things that are made. The Trove, Nesta, Elaine,
Feyre,
Miriam,
the Cauldron.
Nesta made her sword. She can make items. She can
make items.
I don't think we've seen anything be unmade, but that makes me nervous.
Right? Isn't that a little bit ominous?
The book is saying that's the cycle.
Right. Because a cycle is, that means that that means it's occurring. It's going to happen. It's a cycle. So what the fuck is the book warning us against? Because it's unmade to made to unmade. That is the cycle. Like calls to like. I don't know. I just read that quote with like new eyes. And for the first time, I was like, what the fuck is this trying to say?
No, I definitely caught that too when I was listening to the graphic audio. I was like, wait, I don't remember all of that.
Yeah, because it's just like close to like, we get it, Sarah. But yeah, what about the rest of the quote? Literally. Nobody ever talks about the rest of the quote.
What the fuck? That does make me a little bit nervous, mm-hmm, that it's a cycle, apparently. What the fuck does that mean?
Circle of life. Is giving all's well that ends well. And I don't know, but I feel like now I'm nervous about that, because I feel like, are we gonna, are Tron sisters gonna go back to human? durian. Durian's made technically.
Yeah.
I don't know. I got a little bit of foreboding feeling there. So wanted to see where your head was at on that. I don't know if it means anything.
I'm definitely going to keep that in mind when we learn or we read about more of the made objects. I'm going to keep that in mind because I'm like, does it mean anything or does it mean anything?
Yeah, is it just like a quote that she put in there? Because I don't know. I'm just also like, the Dread Trove has been around for fucking ever. Mm-hmm. It's not like it has yet to be destroyed. It's almost looked at as a lot of things that like they can't be destroyed. And that was the whole thing with the cauldron. They were like, we can't destroy it, so we have to hide it.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's foreshadowing that there's going to be a moment where the cauldron's destroyed in the future.
Definitely could be.
That's all I can think of. But if the this is such a question. If the cauldron is destroyed, does that mean all the made items are also destroyed?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yeah.
Oh, fuck!
I don't know, but that would be wild.
No, there's no way. There's no way she's gonna kill off that many people, especially main characters. But maybe it's just like they lose their powers.
I was gonna say, who would die? Only Jurian would Elaine die.
Elaine and Nesta.
They wouldn't die, though. They would just go back to being human.
But I'm saying, I'm hoping that doesn't mean that they would die. I'm just hoping it means they would just like lose their powers, and same with the Dread Trove.
Yeah.
That is such...
I'm assuming that it doesn't mean they would die. I'm assuming they would just go back to being human. But that's interesting in and of itself, because if they're both with immortal mates and they end up going back to being human, I don't know how that would even work, what that would mean. Sarah could do a lot with that. I guess we'll see. And then just like a last little bit of world building we get during all of this is the whole Miriam and Draken. If I'm not mistaken, we haven't heard too much about these two yet. And this was just in passing. But we do find out that Jurian was in love with this chick named Miriam. And Miriam apparently left him for this guy named Draken. And then like now Jurian thinks that she's dead. And then Draken is like somehow responsible. So they think that he wants to use the cauldron to revive her and then kill Draken. And yeah, it's just really interesting.
Dude, not gonna lie, that whole subplot of these books is so confusing to me.
Yeah.
It is so fucking confusing. I don't understand it.
Understand it still?
I don't. I really don't. I'm like, okay, so Amarantha basically enslaved Jurian for killing her sister. Mm-hmm. Amarantha's sister was in love with Jurian because he was like, I'm using you.
Right, because Jurian was in love with Miriam.
Miriam was a maid person who was in Rhysand's court at some point.
But the cauldron just gifted her eternal life. It didn't really gift her any other of the... I don't even think she's technically Fae. I think she just has an immortal lifespan. I could be wrong. And then Draken is a whole different race of people who are Fae, but they have the wings, like the Bat Boys, but they have angel wings. So we'll keep our eyes on Jurian, the Miriam Draken situation going forward. There's a lot to unravel there. It only gets more complicated and explained, but at least we'll have some questions. I don't know. We'll get there. But that being said, it is finally time for us to cover theories and Master's connections. So I want to go ahead and give y'all another spoiler warning. This is your time to bow out if you have not read every single book in the Sarah J. Maas universe. We will be touching on content from all three series, all of the books, including the newest release, House of Flame and Shadow. So if you're not all the way caught up, please take this time to exit. We will see you guys in our next video. Thank you so much for hanging out with us so far. All right, time to get into it. So the main things that we really want to focus on in this series in Master's Connections is the cauldron and the Book of Breathings. So starting with the cauldron, so when they get the Book of Breathings and we find out that Amarin's the only one who can read it, she immediately is like, it was written in the holy tongue. Also in the book, I'm not going to try to pronounce it, but in the book, she refers to the language as the holy tongue in Hebrew, literally. So just another nod to the fact that she is this Hebrew angel of death that we talked about a couple episodes ago. But she's literally the only person who recognizes it. So that all just ties into that theory that we had. Then we know that Rhys has heard the legends of this before. And he heard that the book was written in the tongue of the mighty beings who feared the cauldron's power and made the Book of Breathings to combat it. mighty beings who were here then vanished. I don't know what that means, but we know that gods are not around in Prithian anymore. Nobody worships the gods. Nobody believes in the gods. I'm just saying, is this all connected? Now I'm questioning my own theories, but is it possible that there are, we already think this, but there are good gods and there are bad gods. And that's where we're at with the Volg and the death gods and the Asteri and the Daglin. And then the gods from Throne of Glass, even though I don't think they're good gods either. So it's like, are all these immortal higher beings, are they all connected? Who were the gods that were in Prithian? Are they the same as the gods that were in Throne of Glass? Are we talking about a different set of gods here? Because I don't think that Amrin came from being a pet of the gods from Throne of Glass, because she very specifically says we had one ruler, one god. And so I'm like, was that god a woman? Because also in House of Flame and Shadow, we find out from the Underking that Erd was a bastardization basically of Word, who was the original god in Aurelia, who was the only god when she was ruling and then became like, she was more of a governing force. Would it make sense if Amrin is like an angel of Erd basically, and Erd, oh my God, I don't know. Like, my brain hurts thinking about it, but.
Yeah, my brain hurts too. I'm trying to keep up. Okay, if Amrin was an angel of Erd, then that wouldn't that just mean that she comes from Crescent City then?
Not necessarily, because.
The
angels in Crescent City somehow came from the same place that she did, but not necessarily her. Like, what I'm thinking is, this is so complicated. What I'm thinking is she was like an angel of Word. And when she decided to leave, she went to Prithian, was stuck in Prithian, or not even stuck, but she was living in Prithian, but like during the time that they went over to Midgard. So remember, this is happening in like chronological order. So it's like she started off in Aurelia, that world, like not what we know it as now with Aelin and all of them, like way before that, like when Word was still a god, like the god, before the other gods came into play. She started out as her archangel, and that's where the archangels came from. Then, for whatever reason, other gods came into play. Word stopped being Word. At some point during that, Amrin got stuck in Prithian, or went to Prithian of her own free will, was there, was in Prithian when the whole crossover into Midgard happened. The So Amrin was here and they crossed over, but then how did the other archangels get there?
I don't know. We never were told.
Oh God. Angels are in Prithian. Like, basically Draken's people are angels. Right. Just not-
Maybe there's different versions of angels, since if there's that many planets, it is likely that there's different versions of angels.
Yeah, I would think there's different versions, but I would think that they all came from one place. Like, they all started from one bloodline and then were bred to be different things, would be my thought process. The same way that the Fae on Midgard were, they all started as the same kind of thing and then they were bred to be different things. This is all just crazy. But the real question is, how the hell did the Book of Breathings and the Walking Dead get into Jezebah's library in Crescent City when we know that the Book of Breathings is literally not even put together yet in Prithian, and the Walking Dead was with Aelin the last we saw it in Throne of Glass. And we know that the Walking Dead is basically a book of word marks.
Do you think the language of the Book of Breathings could also be word marks?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Also, I will say, during the escape scene with Amrin and Pharah, Amrin was doing some crazy magic shit with symbols that Pharah didn't fucking understand. Right. I'm like, okay, no, that has to be word marks. It fucking has to be word marks.
She was like, the whirls up the wall. It's literally word marks. It's all word marks. So it would make sense if that governing force that Amrin was talking about, the one ruler, was Word.
Really quick. It makes sense, too, because the first time, the first few times we see word marks in Throne of Glass is when Aelin is trying to learn how to unlock things. And that's really what Amrin was trying to do. It was a door that they were trapped in.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. What the fuck? Okay, yeah, but how the fuck did Jessup?
That's the real question, is how, when Feyre yeeted it into the cauldron, how the hell did it wind up in Midgard with Jezebel? Is there multiple copies of it? Is this supposed to be like a multiverse situation where if like somebody travels into one multiverse, they can take something and then bring it back and it's still a copy of it? Because that doesn't make sense. Even if world walking was involved and say that somebody literally went and got the books, then it would have to be after they had them, which, I mean, how long is it supposed to have been between? We know that the shit that's happening right now in Prithian is also happening at the same time as stuff in Crescent City. Crescent City is happening right now, but we don't know what the time period is. It doesn't make sense that it could be such a long stretch of time, at most 1 or 2 years, that this whole war with Highburn and then everything takes place.
The last time we saw the Book of Breathings, it's an Akawar. When it was Feyre or Amran, they threw it in the fucking cauldron.
Right.
So I'm like, okay.
So I'm saying,
is the cauldron able to transport objects?
I think it's possible that when that happened, we know that the cauldron had turned into a void, and that's why Feyre threw it in there, was to get rid of it. That it's definitely possible that void led to another world, which could have been Midgard, but then how the hell did Jezebel end up with it?
Jessica, we learn from House of Flame and Shadow, is a priestess of Parthos, and she was a human. But Napoleon turned her immortal, and she had to take all the shit from that library, and she made it into her own thing in Crescent City throughout the Spitch Old.
She was the protector of Parthos. But we also know that she was a collector of items, so it would make sense if at some point those books ended up in her library, as they didn't necessarily have to come from Parthos. We know that the book is there before Micah dies, because Micah is the one who touches the books. So it has to happen in the first book of Crescent City. We know that it's there. We know that in the end of the second book and in the third book of Crescent City, she goes to Prithian, and the timeline is that Nyx has already been born. So it's after the war. How long between these two things? It's the timeline is so confusing.
Oh, yeah, I never thought so hard before in my life.
Because,
okay, I'm pretty sure the events that happen in ACOTAR is like a year and a half.
Right. It's not more than 2 years.
2 years max, like literal max. Crescent City, do we even get?
I know that whole shit with that flame of House of Flame and Shadow was supposed to be 1 week. I don't know.
Because the last book is literally like 6 fucking days.
Yeah, it was 1 week. Literally 1 week. So
there's no mention in Crescent City that I can think of, at least, that's, oh yeah, it's been a year since, I don't know, Danica's death. Or it's been 6 months since, I don't fucking know. Something else fucking happens. I'm just like, maybe she's keeping that part unknown right now for a reason. Yeah. But I don't know. That is confusing.
I'm just like, whatever happened, it's the timeline for me, because it has to be before House of Sky and Breath. It has to really be before Crescent City for it to already be in the library. But there's such a short time between Wings and Ruin and Silver Flames.
Something else that I just found online, thank you Reddit, that I completely forgot about, is when Bryce and House of Flame and Shadow is in Prithian, Amryn says her tattoo is from the Book of Breathings.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't forget about that. Yeah, I knew that. So the word marks, it's all in the Holy Tongue, which I believe in this series is word mark. And it would also make sense what you were saying with the whole unlocking language thing, because the whole thing is like, it also like unlocks portals into another world. That's literally what her tattoo does and what the horn does.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Also, the other books that are listed that we have never heard of, like obviously we get a cameo from the Book of Breathings and The Walking Dead. I feel like there's no reason to mention this without it meaning something, but on the Divine Number, which I'm taking to be 7. Okay, I guess it could be 3, but 7, right? There's so many allusions to 7 things in this whole multiverse or whatever. 7's listed so many times that I'm like, the divine number has to be 7, which also in real life, a lot of people say the divine number is 7. And then the queen with many faces, is this about Word herself?
The queen with many faces to me sounds maybe like the triple goddess thing.
Yeah, the mother, maiden, crone.
Yeah.
Here's what I think. I don't think that Amran has a connection to the Library of Parthos. I think that Amran has a connection to Word. And Word is the one god that is coming through all of these books. Word is the one who made the Book of Breathings. That's why it's written in word marks. And that makes sense because she would be worried about the power of the cauldron and feeling she needed to come up with a way to nullify it. So it would make sense if she was the one who made the book. It would make sense if Amran served her. It would make sense if she's the one god who's through all three of these worlds with different names. At the end of the day, it's right. All coming back to Word in a big way. And
that would make sense too with the three worlds and like the triple goddess imagery that we get constantly. Mm-hmm. Makes fucking
and
sense.
The queen with many faces, like if that somehow ties into that, the whole divine number being seven with literally all of these worlds, like the seven courts, the seven boroughs, the seven, I don't even know what.
Princes of Hell.
Yeah, the seven princes of Hell. Like just seven popping up in so many different ways. And then this one language that's traveled through all of these different worlds, and Amran refers to it as the Holy Tongue. I'm seeing a connection here. I don't know.
That's interesting. So then that means Amran would have to come from the Throne of Glass world. Probably.
Most likely, unless there is another world that we also just still haven't heard of yet where Word was the person in charge. I'm not against her being from the Throne of Glass world, but I do think it's okay. Unless you're going to sit here and tell me that Throne of Glass was the first world and that's how we ended up here, then it doesn't make, we're going to have to, not every single person could come from the Throne of Glass world. I'm thinking like it's definitely possible because the one thing that the Underking did say was that Word was like less of a god and more of a governing force of multiple worlds. So if you're a general or you're the person, not even a general, if you're a king or queen per se, and you have your different commanders go to different places to like rule in different worlds, like that would make sense to me. Like that Amran could have been from a world that we haven't necessarily heard of yet, but Word was still the one in charge.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, man.
That's just, my brain hurts.
So obviously we're a little bit all over the place with our theory today. It's very complicated. We have like a pretty solid idea, but we don't know for sure. If you guys have any thoughts and want to add anything, any way to steer our minds in a certain direction, go ahead and let us know in the comments or DM us over on social media. Honestly, a lot of you guys have been commenting on some of our different posts lately and been making me realize things that I didn't. Please, if you have thoughts, let us know. I'm always willing and wanting to hear everybody else's thoughts because it definitely influences me and changes my mind about certain things. A lot of people have been pointing out that Amran would be drinking blood because they literally sacrificed the lambs and put the blood over their door during Passover to prevent the angel of death from coming in. And I was like, that does make a lot of sense. Her drinking human blood doesn't make sense, but the whole lamb's blood situation, that does explain why she would be drinking blood. And that's something that I could not piece together. So please, if you have any theories, comments, further thoughts on what we're discussing, let us know. We're here like for that, and we might even talk about it in a future episode. But with that being said, we do hope that you guys enjoyed our episode on A Court of Mist and Fury today. Next time, we will be covering chapters 39 through 45, along with adding anything to this episode. If you have theories or thoughts on anything that's coming up in that next stretch of chapters or something that's going to happen towards the end of this book, please email us, DM us over on Instagram, let us know so we can keep an eye out for it while we're reading. And then finally, if you guys are watching us, if you're still here with us now and you're a fan, please just make sure that you've hit that like button, that you're subscribed to our channel, that you leave a comment. If you don't know what's a comment, drop the angel halo in the comments. So that way we know that you guys were here. All that stuff really helps us. And we are still trying to grow and reach out to more people and get this community to be as big and as awesome as it can be. We have so much fun with you guys. If you're not already, go follow us over on Instagram and TikTok. Not only do we have a ton of content over there, but that is a great place for you to DM us any thoughts, vote on different polls that we do, and just contribute to what we do in the future. We really appreciate you guys. We love being a part of this community. So thank you so much. And then finally, as always, we want to leave you guys with a quote. the quote of ACOTAR or ACOMAF, but of the whole series that we just felt was so fitting. So, to the stars who listen and the dreams that are answered. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.